Welcome to See Callan.
Thank you.
Now, your husband has been locked up, first in the Dawn Jail and now in the Super Jail in Penetanguishene since 2004. My first question is, just how are you and your family holding up?
Well, first of all, it's the other way around. He started off at the West, then he went to the Dawn, then he went to Penetang last year. So the whole winter, I was commuting to Penetang, and now he's at the Dawn again. How are we holding up? It's the hardest thing that I've ever had to go through in all of my life. It's a form of psychological and emotional torture. You know, it's to have somebody that you love so much living in conditions such as in the Dawn, not being able to hold him, to touch him, because all the contact is via telephone and plexiglass, and knowing how he's living, and especially he's the kind of person that just, you know, loves nature, like being outside, and so it makes you feel guilty just being outside and breathing and feeling the sun and hearing just everyday sounds, because you know that he can't. So, you know, it's hard for all of us, for myself, for my kids, and our family. You know, it's just really hard.
Now, he's facing extradition to the U.S. to face trial on the charges that date back to 1969. Can you tell our listeners, what stage is that extradition process at?
Well, on November the 25th, an order of committal to await surrender was issued by Justice David Watt. And so we're appealing that decision. The attorneys will be making their submissions to the Minister of Justice, and we will be appealing Justice Watt's decision. So it's kind of two-track in that we have to, after we make our submissions to the minister, we have to wait for his decision. And depending on what his decision is, then we might have to go through the appeal stage.
Do you have a date for when any of this is going to happen?
We don't have a date yet. The submissions have not yet been, they haven't been submitted to the minister yet. I believe that'll happen over the next few weeks. Prior to that, though, my husband will be attempting another bail hearing. Hopefully, this will be the fourth time. And hopefully, he'll be successful in coming home while the rest of the proceedings are happening.
Yeah, because this process could take years. I mean, it already has, but it could keep going for years more, yeah?
Well, it's, you know, just being so new to all of this, it is my understanding, because I do know of one case who someone is actually at the Dawn, and I think he's been there now going on his fifth year, and he's also facing extradition to the United States.
What concerns you about the possibility that at some point your husband may be extradited and may face trial on these charges?
You know, what concerns us is that the information that's coming from the United States so far has been false. The key witness for the prosecutor, which is the alleged victim, the former police officer, Terrence Knox, he has already submitted two contradictory statements, and he is their key witness. So in a preliminary hearing, for example, if the key witness has already provided two very different statements, the case probably would have been thrown out, and perhaps there would even have been charges laid out. But our extradition process, they've accepted this information coming to Canada. They claim that my husband was a Black Panther member, and that's not true. The physical evidence has been destroyed by the Chicago police, so There is no gun. There are no bullets. The testimony doesn't corroborate with the physical evidence that's listed. So given all this, including the fact that Terrence Knox was also the investigating officer on the reports, this is what has been shown in court, it doesn't leave us with a lot of confidence that, you know, if my husband goes back there, that he could have, first of all, how can he have even have a trial? You know, it's we're very fearful. We're also concerned that when my husband, if my husband should go back, we worry for his safety at the hands of the Chicago police, and we worry because of the patterns of abuse, including torture, of suspects in custody, which has been documented by organizations such as the Human Rights Watch. Just recently in Chicago, I know that they want to rename West Monroe Street, which is the street where Fred Hampton lived when he was murdered by the Chicago police. They want to rename that to Fred Hampton Way. And there's a huge outcry from the one of the police unions called the Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge 7. They are very opposed to this because they say that the Black Panthers' mission was only to murder police officers, and they don't want anybody's name being honored whose mission was to kill police. And they have a statement on their website currently right now about this, and in the same statement they make references to my husband, who they claim was a former Black Panther, and that he's facing extradition and that they're waiting for him to come back there for the trial. So, you know, it appears that there still is this, it feels very segregated. It's something that, as a Canadian, I'm not used to here in Canada. And I know that we have our issues and our problems, but the tensions there seem still to be so strong, you know, that I just worry. I worry with his profile if going back, if he would be safe, and could he have a trial or even a fair trial? And in particularly around the circumstances that are going on right today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems that they're just not letting go on certain cases, you know, like they're still going after people who were around the American Indian movement in the early 70s, and then they caught that guy that they said had, well, somebody who had deserted from the U.S. Army, and somebody who had avoided military service and was living in Canada and was going down for a holiday, and they caught him at the border.
Yeah, I think he was a AWOL Marine. Mm-hmm. And yes, I don't understand why now. Certainly in my husband's case, the authorities knew, the U.S. authorities knew where he was in the early 70s. And so it's puzzling, like, why didn't they move to extradite him then? You know, the court applications show that this police officer knew exactly where my husband was living in Montreal. So I just don't understand. It's very puzzling, and it's somewhat very scary as well.
We're speaking with Natercia Coelho, wife of Gary Douglas Freeman. Freeman has been detained in Canadian prisons since 2004. He is fighting extradition to the United States, where he would face charges dating back to 1969. In your statement on the anniversary of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, you say that Canada's Extradition Act must be amended, and until then, we're calling for a moratorium on extradition because the current process is really a form of rendition. Can you expand on that a little bit? What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, you know, first of all, the ICCPR, it basically says that every court proceeding must be fair, impartial, and independent. And certainly an unbiased judicial hearing is fundamental in any court proceedings. And with our Extradition Act, after 1999, when it was amended, it accepted hearsay. So sworn statements no longer have to be submitted. And certainly with my husband's case, we also know now that when false and contradictory evidence is submitted, that also is accepted. And with the extradition process, it appears to have an unfair conflict of interest because the Minister of Justice is both at the front end and at the back end of the process. So basically the minister issues an authority to proceed, and this is based upon his acceptance of the application record and the evidence that's contained therein. And you know, no matter how bogus or how false the evidence is, at the extradition judge, basically, he will rule that the evidence is credible just by the mere fact that it has been accepted at the front end. And then, you know, after all of this judiciary phase has been completed, then the minister has to rule upon his own actions, which was at the front end, in deciding whether or not to commit someone for extradition. And that doesn't seem to be quite right. So, you know, I think that our government definitely has to review our Extradition Act because it's operating on the assumption of guilt. And if someone can prove their innocence, at the extradition hearing, basically they say, well, no, this is not a trial. It doesn't matter if you can prove you're innocent or not. You go back, and you can prove your innocence there. So if the minister has already deemed that he's going to accept this at the front end, then it becomes a rubber stamp process for an extradition judge. Something is very wrong with that process, and it's a violation of our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It's a violation of our the ICCPR, you know. So it really has to be reviewed. We can't just hand people over on this basis. It's not right. There should be no courts that accepts false and contradictory statements. I mean, with the Leonard Peltier case, we know that after he was extradited, all this evidence surfaced. And, you know, he's still in jail, even though all this evidence has surfaced to prove that he's innocent. But in my husband's case, the false evidence has already been submitted before he's extradited. And it doesn't seem to make a difference. So, you know, going back to your first question, do I worry? Yes, I do, because of other cases where people do have a lot of evidence to show that they're innocent, and yet they're still locked away.
I'm going to change a direction for my last couple questions, okay? Okay. Since your husband's arrest, you've been very public in your support of him, and you've really been a political actor in this whole case. What role did politics play in your life before this?
Well, in my life, not. I certainly wasn't an activist, and in my jobs that I have had. Certainly, I've been in a position where I've had to sometimes, look out for the little guy, or, you know, I've always been one that right is right and wrong is wrong, and it doesn't matter what side is right or wrong. It's you. That's the way I live my life, whether it's, you know, personally or at work. And I would always advocate for anyone that I thought was not being given a fair shake or is not well treated. But certainly, I'm basically shy and very quiet and private. And that's how I've lived my life. You know, it's been about raising our children. And but, you know, when you have a person that you love and all of a sudden I'm having to defend, you know, not just a coworker, a colleague, or just a friend. It's he's my life. And I know that he's innocent of the charges, and I know he's a good man. I know that what happened to him in 69 was not right. And I will do everything and anything I have to do to try to bring truth and justice and democracy to this. In the end, if after we've gone through all of the processes, if he has to go back, then that's what he has to do. You know, he's not let out on bail because he's deemed to be a flight risk. Well, he would never leave his home. He wants to stay here with his family, with his friends. You know, he's not going to get up and run away somewhere. He never has. I mean, when we had an incident at the border in 1983 and we didn't claim a camera and got caught, the RCMP basically were called in. They fingerprinted him. And at that time, which was 1983, we were pretty sure that we would be getting a knock on the door and that he would have been arrested by the RCMP at that time. But we didn't run. We didn't change our address. We didn't move. We didn't change our phone number. You know, it's my husband came here because he feared for his life. He came here to survive. He came here because he learned he was going to be a father. And, you know, it's not wrong to want to live somewhere where there's, you know, less fear, where there isn't the same kind of discrimination that African Americans were facing in the 60s in major American cities. You know, it's but, you know, we will do what we have to do within the law. And but my mission is twofold. One is to bring him home with us. The second one is to change the Extradition Act. It has to be amended. So I knock on doors, politicians. I've gone to Ottawa a couple of times. And, you know, I'm completely out of my comfort zone, I have to tell you. But it's for a worthy cause. I can't think of any cause that I would work harder for than this one.
Can you say a few words about who are some of the people that have been standing with you and your family and offering their support, and also what you're asking people to do at this stage?
You know, we have a website set up from the family and friends of Gary Freeman, and I think that basically says it. It's the people that are behind him are his family, are his friends, are his co-workers. We have a statement from QP National, which represents over 500,000 members, as well as his QP 416, which is the membership that he has, and those represent 9,000 workers. And we have a website. We have some signatures there that the count from March 13th is about 1,100. You know, there are a lot of people out there that support this case, a lot of them for, I would suppose, different reasons. The ones that are very close to us know the person that he is. His friends, certainly, and people who work with him, they know the kind of man that he is, and they know that this is wrong. For many people, they have, they're very knowledgeable on that period of history in the United States, which was a very ugly period of time. And they know the kind of abuses that were going on there. And given, you know, that my husband hasn't been involved in any criminal activity, you know, he's lived here crime-free pretty much, except for the odd speeding ticket. People know, and I think that they're saying the man has lived here over 30 years in Canada, and his roots are here, his family is here, his home is here. So what justice can be served by sending him back?
Well, thank you very much for talking with us and giving us your perspective on this anniversary of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and for letting us know what's going on with this very important case.
And I thank you very much for having me on.